Gary Johns, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Now, you've edited a book called Really Dangerous Ideas, and it's a great book because it's the sort of book that someone who's very busy can easily use, because the essays are well written, succinct, short, and you get the nub of the idea quite easily. So, look, take a gold star for the book for starters.
Well, thank you very kindly.
Now, let's deal with your contribution. Number 9, abolish the Human Rights Commission.
Yes, that's a tad dangerous, isn't it?
Well, some people might say it is, but why don't I let you tell us why you think we should do that?
Well, I think all of the hard work looking after people's human rights has been done, and it was done by people like you and, to a lesser extent, me, that is, politicians and ordinary citizens who are active and seeking equal rights for women, immigrants, gays, and so on and so forth. And then the Human Rights Commission comes along at the end when it's all over, if you like, and it's really just a bit of what I call triumphal decoration at the end. And we have commissioners who say, oh, look at all the work we're doing. Well, the work was done. There are significant acts of Parliament, discrimination acts, which were all put in place in the 80s. And life has moved on, and those acts can be used to effect through the courts.
Look, you use the example of Graham Innes, a federal discrimination commissioner, took an action privately because he said the New South Wales Rail Corporation was discriminating against blind and vision impaired people because it didn't have audible announcements. Can you tell us how successful he was and why you think that case is an example we should take to heart?
Well, Graham is the Federal Disability Discrimination Commissioner and a very decent person, and took a private action against New South Wales Rail Corp because when he was standing on the station, he couldn't hear the announcements for the trains, and a blind person needs to be able to hear that. I understand that. But he took the action before a federal magistrate as a private person and had a win. So he didn't need to be a discrimination commissioner. We don't need a discrimination commission. That was the point. And others could take such private actions.
You go on and say, well, that begs the question, why do we have the Human Rights Commission if people can, in fact, the laws are there, the processes are there for people to achieve these things in their own right?
Yes, there are. And there are plenty of NGOs, groups who are supporting discriminated persons or persons likely to be discriminated against who would support such action in a court. And look, most of the so-called discriminations that occur, that the commission looks at, occur in the workplace. All those matters can be handled through Fair Work Australia.
You make the point that the Human Rights Commission is like a lot of bureaucracies, and that is they engage in mission creep.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, we're adding commissioners all the time, finding something else to be upset about.
Well, they add commissioners. I mean, I don't know why there's a race commissioner and then an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander commissioner, you know, presumably one would have done. But what annoys me most is that the commission lobbies. It lobbies government, for instance, for resources for aged care or for employers to take on more and more responsibilities which are unrelated to their business. For instance, there's a lot of pressure on at the moment that employers should look after mainly women, who've suffered from domestic violence. Well, what's that got to do with the employer? They lobbied for a national disability insurance scheme, for instance, but look, it's not a human right. A national disability insurance scheme is a question of how much money that the rest of the taxpayer wants to devote to the disabled. Now, we hope it's a great deal, but that's not a matter of human rights. It's a resource question, and commissioners
should not... Which
belongs with
government.
Absolutely with government. They've lobbied for the removal of taxation on native title earnings. What the hell has that got to do with discrimination? They want Aboriginal recognition in the Constitution, a Bill of Rights. They were behind, and others, this anti-free speech consolidation in the Act, which has just recently been withdrawn.
So it went so marvellously for the government of the day, didn't it?
So they're getting up to tricks, and they also have expanded all sorts of things to do with the nature of discrimination and how sensitive one must be to the allegedly discriminated against. And you think, hang on, what's this mob up to? And look, they cost us $32 million a year. Now, that's not a large amount of money.
Not insignificant, though.
Not insignificant, but If you have a look at the staff of the Commission, they proudly boast that women comprise 73% of the staff of the Commission. Now, that suggests to me these are true believers, not analysts.
They'd be a bit upset, I think, if the 73% was male.
They would indeed. So I think there's some pushing and plugging going on there. But let's go back to the real world, not the Discrimination Commission. Now, for instance, since World War II, women have entered the workforce in larger numbers, and that will continue. And one of the reasons for this is quite simple. Women produce children over a smaller percentage of their life now. They are living longer.
Yep.
Now, in fact, I've got a little figure here that the time devoted to raising and caring for children could be as little as 10% of a woman's life. So it doesn't consume her whole life. A woman is out there looking for other things to do. That alone drives women to demand equal rights in the workplace and elsewhere. And that's been going on for 30, 40, 50 years in a serious way. I don't think we need a sex discrimination commissioner to tell us that.
Yes, I don't think, I can't think of any people who regard themselves as part of a women's movement who think that their being and their thinking processes and their energy towards that comes from the existence of a human rights commission. It comes from other sources.
It does. And look, with an ageing population and so on, this country will need every worker it can lay its hands on, which is why we're importing workers, visa 457, is it, visas?
It is indeed.
We are looking for workers. They'll be immigrant workers, they'll be women, they'll be older workers. The discrimination commissioners could hang up their spectacles tomorrow and the world would get on in a less discriminatory way, because the world needs all sorts of people to work and to do other things.
Yeah, you raised some interesting figures about Aboriginal Australians,
yes.
In particular about the rate of intermarriage and also the rate of employment. And I think conclude from that the Human Rights Commission hasn't been instrumental in the welfare of Indigenous Australians in that context either.
No, the key to Aboriginal success is integration. And this country has a very high intermarriage rate. Now, intermarriage is just one aspect of integration. I'm not suggesting people have to. Nevertheless, 73% or so of all marriages involving an Aborigine are between an Aborigine and a non-Aborigine. That's been going on for decades. Again, before the commission was ever set up, before we ever had an Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander commissioner. Aborigines are voting with their hearts. It has nothing to do with the commission.
Sure. And what about employment for Indigenous Australians?
Sorry, yes. Employment, similarly, where an Aboriginal person, if you like, lives in a viable labour market, city, regional area, very few remotes, and where they mix and match, go to school, are well-trained, they get work just about, not quite as much, just about the same as anyone else, which blows away the whole myth that Aborigines are so different and, culturally distinct, blah, 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 blah. They may well be, but if they go to school, stick at it, they get a job, they get married, they pay their taxes.
From reading your article, do I understand correctly that what you're basically saying is that if we look at the underlying real causes of change, we won't find it's the Human Rights Commission at all, and that what we'll see them doing is engaging in after-the-fact proselytising.
Absolutely. Nicely summed up. Yes. They remind us of the victories that have been won by migrants, by women, and by Aborigines. And when the various discrimination acts were passed from 1975 through into the mid-1980s, it was law that you couldn't discriminate, and employers had to be very careful. And then it was the real world. It was the pushing of people and politicians that made those laws, but also changed people's attitudes. So we've gone through Australians have gone through an enormous cultural change since World War II. We just don't need discrimination commissioners to tell us that.
Indeed. Now, you identified a couple of quite sneaky ways, people might think, that the Commission can spread its mandate, which is one way, of course, to convince us and others that they need to be there. One is to lobby for changes in the law. We might understand that. But the next one is to broaden the definition of people that are offended and broaden the definition of an offence to intensify the offence, that is, make it tougher, harder to get out of, and worst of all, I think, degrade the defences available to the alleged offender. Now, how did you come up with that list?
Well, it's pretty easy. The Commission boasts about all these things, so you can read it on the website. But this business of degrading the defences, you remember in these changes to free speech, if you like, that were to a damaged free speech that were recently withdrawn, an employer had to prove that they weren't in the wrong, rather than an employee prove that the employer was in the wrong. Which can be almost impossible to do, and as you know, sets up a situation where the employer says, look, okay, I'm guilty before I walk in the door, so here's some money, go away.
And gee, we've all heard of that.
We have, and it doesn't get anywhere near the truth, but it does set up this sort of moral hazard whereby it's worth the employee having a crack at the employer for no reason, that there might be a pot of money at the end of it. And it doesn't help relations. It doesn't suggest that the downtrodden are now saved. It's a very foolish thing to be doing.
And perhaps it does encourage, as you say, bureaucracies to suggest, in your words, new ways to have government intervene in daily life.
Yes, yes, it does. And I don't see that we need it. I think at the end of the day, there are good people whose eyes are wide open and who want to look after the interests of others. They're private citizens, they're politicians, they're people in NGOs. We don't need the Commission to tell us all that.
Well, you see, Gary, having read this, you are saying, let's get rid of the Human Rights Commission, but you're not opposed to protection of human rights in any way whatsoever. What you're actually saying is that politicians, lobby groups, etc., have put the processes in place for that to happen, and we now don't need someone just to remind us about it every day.
That's quite correct. We're a big liberal democracy. We got to be a big liberal democracy because of whom we are. And a discrimination commission reminds us of perhaps of who we were. So they're outdated, and like any good bureaucracy, they make work, they keep themselves busy, and they try and dream up ever more remote ways in which they could keep themselves relevant, but we don't need that. We don't need them.
Well, Gary Johns, I have to say, having read the article, it doesn't really seem such a dangerous idea to me. It seems a damn good idea. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you.